Continue on now. We know where we're at. We're outside the garden, which should bring it, the situation into clarity. There has been rejection of God. There's been rebellion against God, and it has brought us to the point where we studied last week that the very first two people that come from Adam and Eve as a consequence of their sin are the two sons and. The one son rises up and murders the other. I mean, the consequences of sin are fast. They're devastating. And without redemption, they just continue their path. And we saw that the motive behind this first murder within the scripture ultimately was what turns out to be what we would identify today as really is religion. This was the whole concept between the... Let me go back to that. Yeah. Here to the Cain factor, which I'll do this here. We'll just get this back up here. Should have thought of putting this up. But this is what we saw. This was the comparison that we drew between the two guys. And of course, Abel would represent redemption, whereas Cain would be religion. And from the initial perspective of this, right outside the Garden of Eden, nothing has changed. These things are still as true today as they were. At any point throughout history, religion will never tolerate redemption because redemption makes religion unnecessary. And if you're religious, you don't want to be unnecessary. You want to be recognized. This was the great conflict between Jesus and the religious of his day. He came with all of these things on the left. They had all of the things on the right, and there was this great conflict. And so the conclusion for them was the same as it had been for Cain. Well, let's get rid of him. Well, of course, it turns out that, that it's not quite that easy, but they thought they had accomplished their purpose. And so this is what has been going on. So we got to this point. We talked this aspect that I call the Cain factor here. And remember that this was a choice that God had come to him after refusing his offering from his own hands. God had given him the opportunity to change. And warning him that if you do right, everything's going to go right. But if you don't, then sin is going to, its desire is to have you, but you got to overcome it. Well, we know the story. He didn't. And we believe that because Jesus equates Abel in Luke chapter 18 as being the first of the prophets, we believe, therefore, that Abel was probably proclaiming the truth to his brother Abel, trying to get him to straighten out. Abel was prophesying to his brother Cain, and Cain didn't want to hear about it and thought he would silence his brother's voice. Now, that's really significant because of where we're going to go today. So now this has all happened, and it's interesting here because what we don't know is the appearance of or the aspect of whether Cain knew that the Lord would come to him or whether he didn't. We don't know, but this is interesting. Then the Lord said to Cain. So it is clear that once again, just like he did with Cain initially, with Adam and Eve in the garden, that once again God initiates the contact when there's something that has really just been a slap in his face, this concept of rejection and rebellion. And he asks the logical question. And so he says here, "Where is your brother Abel?" And of course Cain said, that shouldn't be a capital H, that's because of the way when I copy it over. I should have seen that. And it is Cain that says, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" So again, like his parents, he is given an opportunity to come clean. Now we will never know what would have happened if he had repented of what he had done. Just like we'll never know what would have happened if Adam and Eve had repented, because they didn't. That's the bottom line. Adam said, well, after blaming God for the woman, he at least fesses up that, well, yeah, okay, it was the woman that you gave me, but she gave me of the fruit, and I ate. He admitted to what he had done. But notice what's happening here. This is an outright, bold-faced lie to the face of God, because Cain says, "I don't know." Now, you would think that Cain would have recognized who he was speaking to, and that he should have known that God already knows this, but he lies right to the face of God. "I don't know," lie, and then this idea of self-righteousness, "I'm not responsible for my brother, God." You see this? What is this you're making me responsible? Well, is that what God had asked him? All he said is, "Where is your brother?" How does that make you responsible? So you see, already you can see the self-righteousness, the self-centeredness, the self-everything, self-justification, all of the self stuff is coming out here. It's already being initiated. And the thing that's about this is his arrogance in the face of the Lord. You know, once again, what we see here is an extension of God's grace and mercy. Because in all honesty, it is very difficult to understand why God didn't just speak Cain out of existence in the same way that he had spoken him into existence. Because that's what I would have done. But he doesn't do that. There's grace. And so now he's had the opportunity, like his parents, he has failed. But he has taken it to a different level. Because rather fessing up, yes, it was the woman you gave me, but I did eat. Now it's like, I don't know. I didn't do anything wrong here, and I don't know why you're even asking me, because I'm not responsible for it. So he's taking this to a whole other level. Now we're going to see one of his descendants is going to take it to a level even further than this, which is really disgusting, but we'll get to that when we get there. And then in the 10th verse, now this is a capital H, then the Lord says, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." From the ground that Cain would had been tilling to bring his offering to the Lord. Remember, he was a farmer. Abel was a shepherd. Okay? We're going to see later that the descendants of Cain are not shepherds, they're herdsmen, or they're what we would call pastors. They take up the role, but they've broadened it from being a shepherd, someone that just cares for sheep like Abel. But notice what this says. What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. You may lie, God, or Cain, but creation itself knows the truth. And again, it's the ground, the very ground from which Adam and Eve, and then ultimately their offspring in Cain and Abel had been formed from this ground. And now the ground, as creation always does, is in tune with its creator. That's how it's groaning, as Paul teaches us, under the curse. Creation groans. It's groaning under what man has brought unto it. And Paul even says that it's looking for its day of redemption. The earth, the creation itself, which is under the curse, is all groaning and it's looking for the redemption of man that brought it into this state of suffering. Now, what's interesting about this, notice this, the voice of your brother's blood cries out to me. And we've already talked about Abel having been equated with the prophet, one who spoke to him, and it is through this murder that Cain thinks he has silenced the voice of his brother. But it would appear that that's not the case. See, he had silenced his voice in the living realm, but the creation itself would speak with his brother's same voice, but from the very creation of which Cain brought the work of his own hands. And of course, this leads to God's now pronouncement of judgment upon him. So now you are cursed from the earth. Adam and Eve had been removed from the garden. And we know that they were probably very close to the garden because it appears, like we talked about last week, and I even think before that, that they were bringing their sacrifices, which is one of the reasons we know that Cain had done this previously, had done the right thing, but whatever had changed in his life and his heart. But now you're cursed not just from Eden, but from the earth. The very earth that you poured your brother's lifeblood into is now cursed. The ground, notice what he says, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. Now this idea of the earth opening its mouth and taking the unrighteous or the blood of anybody, righteous or unrighteous, is not a new concept. Well, this is the first time it's mentioned, by the way. Verse 10 is the first appearance of blood in the scripture. Now it's implied in the animal skins, but the word is not said until here. By the way, that was Cain's lie was the first lie recorded in the scripture. And we could go on and on. But this idea of the ground opening its mouth, you see this later on in Moses' day when Moses and what was his name? Was it Dagon? Anyway, whatever. Those guys that opposed Moses and the ground opened up and swallowed them up. So this is not unusual for God to use the creation, the earth itself, to receive them. Now, what's also interesting is that we're not told how or when, but obviously what's going on here is the concept of Sheol is brought into the picture. Now remember, Sheol is the place of departed spirits. The Hebrew Sheol, which is the Greek equivalent of Hades, we've come to see it as hell, but initially both were simply the place where if you died, this was the abode of the dead. This is where you went, because Christ had not prepared the way to get to God. So this place in the belly of the earth is very clear where this place was, that this is where you went, and if you went there in faith of the Messiah or the Redeemer that was to come, then the Messiah would come and lead you out of there, which is precisely what Jesus did. Okay, he led them out. Paul tells us that in Ephesians, and there are some other places where he went and he preached to those that were still held in a separate or captive away from being God's presence. Those that didn't believe are still there to this day. Okay, and all unbelieving dead throughout history will remain in that place until the end of Christ's reign on earth at what we call the Great White Throne Judgment. Then all of the dead throughout all of history will be brought before the throne of King. That's what the Great White Throne Judgment. But that doesn't come until after the thousand-year reign. But it's interesting that Abel has now gone to the place of the departed dead, which is in the belly of the earth, and now it's his voice crying out through his blood, and that's what he's saying here. So now you are cursed from the very earth that is now crying out with the voice of your brother. When you till the ground, verse 12 now, it shall no longer yield its strength. In other words, the creation itself now will resist you, Cain. And a fugitive and a vagabond you shall be on the earth. Now, you can see the points there, but ultimately what's happening here is the first family had settled outside the Garden of Eden and had a set appointed time where they would worship God. And he was tilling the ground and his brother was a shepherd. And we don't know what the other family members did because we're not told. They're not pertinent to the story of redemption, but we certainly know that they were there. And now all of a sudden, he has to be completely removed from these things. And notice what it says, a fugitive and a vagabond, in other words, a wanderer, you shall be on the earth. You're going to be constantly in movement, looking for a place to settle, but it will never happen. Okay? It's not going to happen. This will be the way that you will be known from here on out. And Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Now notice what I wrote in the notes. What? A whiner. Should have thought of that before you killed your brother, doofus. And how can you complain about this? It is absolutely the audacity of man to think that he can act like this and then complain about the judgment that he brings on himself for doing that stupidity. It's just unbelievable. But this is the heart of man. This is what he does. So Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than I could bear. Oh, it's too much for me, Lord. I can't bear it all. I got to wander around now and I can no longer farm. Wah, 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 wah. I mean, really? It just really bugs me. Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground. Did you catch that? Where is his concern? That he's been driven from the face, or later we're going to see here in just a few minutes, from the presence of the Lord? No. The punishment that he is equating is that he's been driven from the ground. Oh, I've lost connection with my reality. The one thing in life that I could hold on to, my growth, my crops and my other thing. Oh, this is where this guy's headed with this. That is tragic as well as pathetic. Surely you have driven me this day from the face of the ground, and I shall be hidden from your face. So at least he recognizes that. But his first thing on his mind is the ground. And I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond. Well, it sounds like he was paying attention. On the earth. Oh, and by the way, and it will happen that if anyone who finds me will kill me. Really? You mean like you slew Abel? You mean that kind of death? And what, all of a sudden now you're worried about death? You're worried about somebody treating you the way that you treated your brother? Really? This is a reality? The heart of man. This is what we call depravity at its best. To do something like this and then complain about the consequences that come naturally from these types of actions. What a sad thing. We live in a world nowadays where justice is rapidly slipping between our fingers. You know, boy, we could get into all the politics and stuff, but we won't do that, or we'll really get off track. But I mean, it's getting worse and worse and worse, and it starts to get to the point where you know, and the clarity in the scripture from when it says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Woe. And that's where we are now. All of a sudden, all of these things that were common sense should not have been, you know, tolerated or now accepted. And that which is right is being pushed further and further and further away. In the name of enlightenment, man's enlightenment, what a tragedy. So, I'm going to have to wander the earth now. Now notice, and anyone, and it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me. So obviously, Cain and Abel were not the only two descendants of Adam and Eve. This is a question I get asked all the time. Because we're going to see here, Cain's wife. Well, where did he get his wife, man? She was his sister, doofus. That's where he got her. Well, they should have had two-headed babies then. No. See? Obviously, Adam and Eve were the first. And so, you know, because of the consequences of the fall, the gene pool was still relatively pure. It hadn't been contaminated yet like it is in our day or has been for the last few thousand years. In fact, it was in Moses' day that God forbid this kind of thing. But until then, there was no law against it because God had commanded to be fruitful and multiply. See? So obviously things were different in those days. I don't know if you guys remember, this is the way I always explain this, and this will help you if somebody asks you this, because the critics of the Bible always want to challenge you with this. I don't know if you remember, there's a few years ago, some of you remember, I've shared this before, there was a movie with Michael Keaton that came out, it's probably 10 years at least, and it was called Multiplicity. And what it was about this construction guy whose name was, who Michael Keaton plays the character, and he has a construction business. Well, he's the office guy, he's the site guy, he's one of the workers, he's one of the laborers, and so on and so forth. And the guy just can't handle it. It's too much for him to do. And he can't trust anybody else. Well, it just so happens he lives in the day now where they're doing cloning. Okay? So, you know, it's a comedy is what it amounts to. So he goes to the doctor and he gets himself cloned. So he's number one, and number two now turns out that of the cloning process, number two doesn't get his ability to work with his hands, but he has a massive brain. And he's like, hey, this is pretty cool. So he makes number two be the office manager. He gives him that, and so this frees him up. Well, pretty soon he realizes that him and number two still can't keep up. So he goes back, and he has a number three made. And number three comes along, and he's completely different than the first two are. And it goes on down the line until I can't remember. It's been a long time since I saw the movie. It's actually kind of funny. But I think it's number five comes along. And number five is a real doofus. He's like a dr-dr. He doesn't know what's going on. Now, what's the point? You see, one step away from the original wasn't a big thing. Even two steps away wasn't too bad. But then you'll notice in the movie, three, four, and five have some real issues, especially five. And it could be more than I can't remember exactly what it was. But that's the point. The fall had just occurred. The curse was just initiated. They still lived in a world that was still surrounded with a vapor, like we talked about, which God will break up to bring the flood of Noah along with the ground to bring water from the aquifers restored in the earth's surface. So at this time, there was no radiation. There was nothing coming into the earth that could mutate or contaminate that which they've done the earth, which is one of the problems. We can't do this today. Okay? This whole concept of Mary and his sister is looking at it from a modern, contemporary perspective while ignoring the historical reality. Because you can go back in history and some of these ancients, it was very clear that they married family members. It's just, you know, the way it was. And though there certainly were problems, there wasn't nothing like you would have today. So clearly, there were people on the earth. Look, if anybody sees me out there and finds me, they're going to kill me. Well, why would he fear that if there weren't other people that were already out there? See? So this is what his fear is, okay? Now notice what has happened. From big, tough, strong, I'm going to kill my brother Cain, to now I'm scared of everyone Cain. Fear has now become a reality. Shame and guilt entered the picture under Adam and Eve. Murder, self-righteousness, you know, whatever, enters the picture with Cain. And now fear, for the first time, enters into the picture. And notice the one that initiated the concept of killing another person is the very one that's afraid of that killing. It's sad commentary. And as I said earlier, we're talking roughly 6,000 to 10,000 years ago here, something like that. What has changed? Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. This stuff is still the same today as it was then. You said 10,000 years? That's all the earth is? That's all the earth is. That's all it is. And science is finding out slowly and surely that that's the case. Yeah, but they're not going to tell you and I. Anyways, verse 15. And the Lord said to them, therefore, or said to him, therefore, whoever kills Cain, so again, whoever would imply that there are others, it wasn't just Abel, and now Cain is the only one left, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. In other words, complete judgment. I will bring complete judgment on the one who ignores me from this point on in this particular matter. And the Lord set a mark on Cain. That is not the right translation. It is not a mark, the mark of Cain. Okay? Oh, he's got the devil 666, or he's got, you know, an upside down cross. No, no, it's a sign, is the literal word. It's the Hebrew word avan, and it means sign, not mark. So there was something that God, and we do not know what it is, and it's lunacy to try to figure it out. We're not told. All we know is that God put a sign with Cain that you better stay away from him. Now the rabbis, throughout their history, they came up with five possibilities for what this is. Now you would think that these Jewish scholars or Hebrew scholars would have known better than to do this. But you know, everybody wants to know what it was, as if it matters. All that mattered is if you lived in those days, you would go, yeah, I'm not going near him. Whatever it was. For all we know, the sign could have been an angel that everybody else could see except Cain, and goes, oh yeah, I'm not getting anywhere near that guy. We just don't know. But it wasn't a mark. This concept of the mark of Cain has created unbelievable problems throughout the history of this phrase. And it was never mark, it was sign. But they believed that it was the letter T, tau, in the Hebrew language. That was one of the things. And I can't remember the significance of that. But then there was also, or the second option was that maybe it was the four letters of the Lord's name, so that when they saw him, they knew that the Lord, you know, had a plan for this guy. Don't you mess with him, you know. Others were that he had leprosy. And so that anybody that walked around, you know, and saw him would beat feet and, you know, and go around him. Others said that he had specific marks on him. And one even said that he had a horn. Okay, really? Really? So, and then we wonder why people laugh at us. All it was God did something that clearly, here I'm saying marked, but there was some kind of sign that told everybody else, stay away. And we don't know what that was, whatever the case may be. So, and the Lord set a mark on Cain, and lest anyone finding him should kill him. Now, why would God do that? Why not just let anybody kill this guy? Why? I mean, doesn't he deserve it? Because vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, and I will repay. Maybe the greater punishment for Cain was to go through life like this, that the land that he loved would no longer produce him, that maybe the family he loved, even though he had murdered his brother, he was no longer to be there. Maybe even as warped as it was, his relationship with the Lord, he was no longer able to have that. That's a pretty serious punishment. See? There's no way to know. We just don't know. But these are some interesting things to think about. Then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord. This is sad, sad verse. Sad verse. He's not just removed from his family and from Eden or access to the appointed place of worship around Eden. He went out from the presence of the Lord, was no longer able to fellowship with God in any way, even in a warped way. He was left completely by himself, and he dwelt in the land of Nod. Nod is not a place. It's literally, the word means wandering, wanderer, or vagabond. Okay? So he dwelt in the land where he was a wanderer. Okay? It wasn't a literal place called Nod. And he wandered on the east of Eden. Now, I put some things in the notes that I thought, just so you could check them out, see what you thought. And frankly, they're a bit odd because the guys that I were reading on this didn't say anything about this. But I found it interesting that he dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden, which is precisely where God put the cherubim to block the way to the tree of life. I mean, he could have gone any direction. Why did he go that direction? Why go east? So wherever the Garden of Eden was, God had removed Adam and Eve from the garden, and he had put a cherubim on the east side of the garden to not allow anyone access to the tree, okay? And this is precisely where he goes and chooses to wander. Call me crazy, but that makes me kind of wonder what the heck is going on here. Now, I don't know. There's a couple of possibilities. This is just a Rick thing. Take it or leave it. It's no big deal. I just thought it was intriguing because... There's either maybe he had gotten to this place where he understood this and he just wanted to be so where he knows if he faces the right direction, at least he's pointing in a place that was maybe dear to his heart. I don't know. There's no way to know. And this, maybe I'm making way more out of this than it should be. I don't know. There's a real possibility for that too. But at least the possibility exists that he was trying to manipulate a way back in and to keep it within sight. I find it interesting that certain religions who reject redemption, who would say that it's what I do that God will accept, that when they pray towards the east. I don't know, just a thought. But I just found that interesting. So now it could mean nothing. Maybe he just went out that way, but I'm like, well, there was other ways to go. Couldn't have gone west, obviously, maybe north or south. Why east? And especially with the connection back there from chapter 3. So, I don't know, take it or leave it. Now, Cain's descendants, that's the next verses here, 17 to 24. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this week. We will touch on them a little bit more next week, because next week, to me, in chapter 5, is just a phenomenal chapter. And I'm really looking forward to it. Many of you know the descendants of Adam through the line of Seth, that the story of redemption is found within that lineage, within those names. And there's some really cool things about that. So I don't know whether it's right to compare Cain's descendants with those of Seth or not. So I don't know. I'm going to wrestle with that, whether we do that next week. But here we go. And you can know this. I didn't write a lot of notes for this because it's pretty clear. But this is one of those, the beget things that we all just go, ay, 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 why did they do this? Because it's important. And so this is what's going on here. And so Cain knew his wife. So obviously it's a sister. Okay, clearly. Remember multiplicity. And she conceived and bore Enoch. Now this is not the Enoch of the Seth line. Obviously there was at least some interaction between Cain and his descendants and those of Seth, because names were always used. But remember, we look as names as like Rick or Bob or Dwayne or whatever. We look as names as if names. But you got to remember, their names, when we read a Hebrew name, what we're reading is a phrase that is implied in a word, and that word then becomes the name. Okay? So they didn't call this guy, Enoch. What they would have said, and what is this one? They would have called him, well, they would have said Enoch, but it would have meant dedicated, okay, or consecrated. That's what it would have meant. So we have to be careful that we do this. It's like I said so many times in the past. Remember that God is not interested in the lines on that map. He does not care about nations as we understand nations. north or continents for that matter. His concern is the people. That's why the word nations is literally ethnos, ethnic groups. God is interested in the descendants of people, not where they live. God is not interested in America as a country. He's interested in Americans within this country who are followers of his. But he's no more interested in America than he is in any other land. And the only reason he's interested in Israel is because Israel was Jacob. We know it as a place. God knows it as a people. Israel, my people. He goes on and on. So we have to remember these things. So we look at these names and we go, oh, no, no. You know, so there are some things to be said about that. So we'll look at these in comparison. But this guy, Enoch, was not the same. It's in the next line. There's another guy, Lamech, who's not the same either. And we'll be talking about him a little bit more here in just a couple of minutes here. So, and Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. And he built the city and called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. Now, what's interesting about this, notice that in the English it says he built the city. The Hebrew says he was building a city. In other words, he never completed it. Why wouldn't he complete it? Because he had been cursed to wander. You see, the very fact that he initiates the building of a city, that whether he planned to be there or not, was again and in the face to God. I'll show you wandering. I'll build the first city of man. This is the first city that is built. And it's built by one who God said he would wander all the days of his life, and the ground would be cursed because of him. Interesting. But it would appear, because then he names the city after his son, Enoch, dedicated or consecrated or whatever. The implication is that he did not remain, because God said no. No. But then to Enoch was born Irad. Irad begot Mahujael. Mahujael begot Methushael. And Methushael begot Lamech. Okay? So what we're going to see here is there are going to be seven generations that come from him. In other words, complete. We're going to be talking about that more next week and so on. But for now, but here's the thing. Now notice what's happened with Cain. He's done this. He's repeatedly stuck his fist in the face of God. He's built the city. He has done all of these things. And then he has descendants. And he has passed on this nature of his, obviously, to his son. Look at verse 19. Then Lamech took for himself two wives. So here we have the first nutcase in history. Just kidding. But here we have the first, again, in your face to God. Because God had clearly told Adam and Eve, the two shall become one. Right? That was the plan of God. This guy goes even further than great-great-great-grandfather did, Cain. He takes it even further, and he's going to defy God even in the concept of marriage, in the covenant of marriage that God established. So again, a slap in the face of God. Now, in case you're unaware, the idea of polygamy has been rampant throughout world history, folks. Okay? We know it's confined in America to certain places, right? We all know the polygamous concept of things here. But what you got to understand, this has been out in the world for millennia. This is not a new concept, multiple wives. Okay? This is where it began. But notice the line, A, that it comes through, and B, the idea that these people are not only now have they rejected God, but they're in absolute rebellion against God. That's what's happening here. So he took for himself two wives. The name of one was Adah, and the name of the second was Zillah. And Adah bore Jabal, and he was the father of those who dwell in tents and had livestock. So Jabal, by the way, you'll see that all three of these brothers, the root of their names are all the same. They were the ones that, they were produced. The Hebrew is producer. In other words, they were the ones that initiated certain things. All of their names are related. It's the ending of their name that identifies them as different. So Adah bore a Jabal, and he was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. So we've gone from a city with Enoch to now the nomadic or Bedouin type of a lifestyle here. That's what's happening. In other words, people that, like Cain, would continue to wander. Notice that he's the father of those who dwell in tents, Bedouins, or nomadic lifestyle, and have livestock. He's the first pastor. Because remember, pastor means to care for the flock. That's what it means. And we know the difference is Abel was a shepherd. His keep was sheep. This broadens it out to camels, cows, you know, you get it. You get all the whole idea. This is the thing that's going on here. Now, again, meat, they're probably not eating meat, though with this family, who knows? Maybe they already were, but probably not. They were using these for clothing and probably for milk and cheese and all of the other types of things, because we know that it wasn't until after the flood that God gave man the freedom to now eat meat, to, you know, to be carnivorous, as we would say. Okay, but this is the first guy. His brother, through the same wife, his brother's name was Jubal. So you got Jabal and you got Jubal. Again, you can see the close relationship. He was the father of those who play the harp and the flute. He was the person that brought music into our world. Okay, and isn't it a tragedy that the first time music shows up, by the way, woodwinds and stringed instruments, is what's being described here. Not that others aren't important, I'm just saying. But notice that the line that this comes in are those who have already rebelled and rejected their creator. It's very interesting to see that. But notice what's happening. There's a civilization that is being developed here out of a curse of God saying, you will wander and the land will never produce. So these people were going to, sort of in defiance of God, they were going to create their own system. Now this isn't going to last because all these folks are going to be gone with the flood. But in the meantime, these are the things that were taking place. And as for Zillah, she also bore Tubal-Cain. Notice his name is Tubal, Jabal, Jubal. And obviously Jubal, we get Jubilee, comes from that. Celebration through music and song and dance and so on. But this guy, Tubal-Cain, she also bore, he was, notice this, an instructor. So the development of these things had apparently initiated, and this babe guy becomes a master, craftsman, or whatever, in bronze and iron. In other words, this is the introduction of metallurgy into the world. Now, weapons are made. Interesting that it comes through this family line. The ones that were a family line that finds as the head of this family line, the one who has shed blood first. Interesting. What's happening here? Okay? And the craftsman in bronze and iron and the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. Now, what's interesting about this Naamah was that the Hebrews, and there's no evidence to support this, but they believe that she actually becomes the wife of Noah. There's no evidence to back that up, and why you would even come to that conclusion is beyond me, but that's just so that you know that that's out there. Now notice this guy. If you think Cain was bad, this guy is a total jerk. Okay? We already saw what he did. He's already in your face to God. But notice what he said. And then Lamech said to his wives. I find it funny that he said to his wives about his great strong prowess and courage. How come he's not out telling the other strong guys in town that this is the case? No, he's at home telling his wives. Interesting. So he says to his wives, Adah and Zillah, hear my voice. Wives of Lamech, listen to my speech, for I have killed a man for wounding me. Now this is actually written in Hebrew poetry. And remember, Hebrew poetry doesn't have to be roses are red, violets, you know, violets are blue, you know, I'm really hot, how about you? It doesn't have to have rhyme and stuff, rhythm. They do what they call parallels, and they're couplets. So we won't get into all of that, but that's what's happening. So this is a poet. This is the first recorded poem. This is the first recorded poem in the scripture. Now notice what also is taking place. We're just a few generations from Adam and Eve. And already, what's happening? Writing is introduced. It didn't take billions of years. And lo and behold, the more these archaeologists go out there and find this, and anthropologists, lo and behold, it does appear that when man appears on the scene, he already appears with the ability to write. Imagine that. I don't want to get going on that. But notice, I have killed a man for wounding him. Notice the arrogance in this guy. He's writing a song about the fact that he has killed someone, and even a young man, for hurting me. So this guy is telling his wives about how big and bad he is. That's what he's doing here. That ought to keep the boys from coming and messing around with my wives, right? It's very interesting. But the arrogance on this guy is unbelievable. The arrogance to completely defy the marriage covenant as God established it, and then to turn around and to know the consequences that Cain suffered for his murder, and now to put it into song to be celebrated, is absolutely sickening. And it's no wonder why now nations and religions all over this world think it's a wonderful thing to shed blood in the name of God. How sad and tragic. So I've killed a man for wounding me, even a young man for hurting me. Now if Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, remember God said, I will avenge on sevenfold whoever comes after Cain for doing this. Complete. Then Lamech 77-fold. I'm even a better killer than my great-great-great-grandfather was. Do you see what he's saying? Now, who remembers another incident of 70 versus 7-fold? How many times do I forgive? They said to Jesus. 7 times. Jesus said, no, not 7 times, but 70 times, 7 times. Interesting, the contrast of a religious mindset that kills because it believes it has the right to do so versus the concept of the Redeemer, who is completely opposite. It's unbelievable when you stop and think about it. So the story of Cain and Abel, the Cain factor, the descendants of Cain, and sadly, this is the offspring of religion and rebellion, and nothing has changed. Sadly, some of Noah's sons, at least 2, brought this mentality onto the ark and passed this on to the generations, Japheth and Ham. Shem appears to have been like Noah and understood the concept of redemption, while Japheth and Ham did not. And we'll talk about those guys when we get to the Table of Nations. But what a tragic family tree, huh? And we look at people today and we say, gosh, you see these kids that come out of these horrible pasts until you find out that the parents had horrible pasts. And then you find out that their parents had horrible pasts and you just go, man, what a tragic family tree. Yeah. There's not much difference between those people and the things that happened in their lives. Maybe they're not murderers. But the devastation that is passed on from generation to generation. And it all starts when you start rebelling against God and rejecting the will of God. Amen? All right.